Today on Master Your Marriage, part two on developing empathy. One of the hardest things we can hear from our spouse or loved one is the word no. No, I'm not going to help you. No, I'm not going to do that. No, I don't want sex right now. And all of these no's can be a real blow to our ego and cause distance between us. Unless we dig in, use empathy, and start with understanding the reason for that no.
Today, we're going to talk about difficult situations like these, where empathy can be one of the hardest things to do, but also the very thing that can heal, de-escalate conflict, and keep resentments from building.
Did you know the average couple waits 6 years to get help in their marriage?
Yeah, that's 6 years of pain, hurt, and frustration.
Hi there, I'm Charlotte Snow.
And I'm Robert Snow.
And welcome to Master Your Marriage,
where we believe that having an amazing marriage should never feel like hard work and shouldn't be a guessing game.
This is the show for married couples who want to discover a scientifically proven approach to building a masterful marriage and have fun while doing it.
So if that's you, you're in the right place. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another episode. If this is your first time joining or listening to the show, welcome. And we thank you sincerely for being here. Make sure that while you're here, you hit that subscribe button because we drop an episode every Wednesday and you don't want to miss it.
So this week, we're continuing to talk about empathy. And as we said before, empathy is trying to understand how someone else feels and what they need, and then letting them know in some way that we understand. And we covered this in depth last week. We talked about what empathy is. We talked about what it isn't. And we also talked about what it requires of us. So go back and listen to that episode. Just to briefly summarize last week's episode, though, empathy is giving someone our full presence and being able to attune to what the other person feels and needs. And we do this without bringing any of our own past, our own judgments, our own biases, our own baggage into the moment.
So you have to leave your baggage at home?
Right.
When you're trying to be empathetic?
And your opinions, right?
Well, that's the hardest part. I always want to bring my opinions to a conversation.
Right.
So when we're doing empathy or when we're learning about empathy, we really oftentimes don't need to speak at all. Like we speak with our eyes and we speak with our body. And if you say any words at all, typically it's only to clarify what the other person is feeling or needing. But the words themselves are not empathy. Right. Empathy is what you feel when there is an empathetic connection. And this is created by focusing on what the other person feels and needs.
Exactly. So I think the metaphor that I think of when I think of empathy is I think of music. Mm-hmm. And I think about all these instruments that play together in a symphony, right? And when it comes to making beautiful music, it's not about just everyone plays the right notes at the right time, right? Before the musicians even begin to play, they have to tune their instruments to each other so that they're all in sync and so that their instruments are all in harmony with one another and making this beautiful sound. And empathy to me is much the same. It's being able to tune in to whatever is alive in the other person, to tune into their resonance that this other person has.
However, empathy is not really the easiest thing to do. And there are some situations that are maybe more difficult than others to, you know, to demonstrate empathy. Mm-hmm. So today we're going to talk about three specific challenging situations that are particularly hard to empathize with, along with giving you tips for how to conquer each of these situations.
Perfect. So let's dive into situation number one, difficult situation to empathize with. Let's talk about harsh words.
Oh, yeah, I don't like harsh words.
So how can you empathize with someone when you have been verbally insulted or spoken to harshly by someone, especially someone you love, like your partner, your spouse? Maybe, for example, I'll just use some harsh words right now to give you an example. You're so lazy. You're just selfish, or you're stupid. You're such a bad parent. I can't believe how inconsiderate you are. You only think of yourself.
That's a quick way to break a connection though, right?
Mm.
Yeah, those are tough.
Yeah.
And when you're on the receiving end of these words, like, you know, those hurtful words, wouldn't you find it kind of difficult to empathize with the person who's saying that?
Yes.
Absolutely, yes. So you don't want anything to do with that. It's going to create distance. Well, so I want to tell a story about Dr. Rosenberg, who's a psychologist, and he wrote the book Nonviolent Communication. So Dr. Rosenberg was visiting a refugee camp in the Middle East, and it just so happened that there had actually been a riot in the camp the night before, and tear gas grenades had been launched into the camps in order to quell the riot.
Mm-hmm. And so then Dr. Rosenberg gets there. He's walking through the camp, kicking these canisters out of the way, which were these, were the tear gas, the empty tear gas canisters. And he noticed on the side that they were stamped with the words "Made in the USA."
That's not helpful.
Right. And here he is in the Middle East, made in the USA on the tear gas canisters. And later on, he ends up getting introduced to people in the camp by the interpreter, and the interpreter introduces him and says he's from where else but America.
Of course, right? And so, as you can imagine, somebody was mad, right? And this man who was very enraged, he jumped out of the crowd and he yelled at him. He's like, "You are a murderer."
Oop, that's intense.
While maybe we've not been called a murderer before, I've never been called that, but I'm sure we can all think about times when we've been verbally attacked in some way in our life, and it takes you back, right? And the way that we handle that verbal insult is really important. Our response to that insult will determine whether or not this conversation escalates and just gets more fired up, or whether it dies back down. And that response is so important.
Right. So that reminds me of a situation I had many, many years ago. It was with an extended family member. It's probably been like 15 years ago now, where someone said something to me that was, I perceived it as very hurtful, very cruel. I was really hurt by it. And yet I reacted poorly. I felt like I needed to defend myself. I felt like I needed to correct them, that they were wrong about what it was that they were saying. And I was just so deeply wounded. As a result, I ended up lashing out. And that reaction, I regret, because it did cost me a lot. It cost me in relationships, and some of the repercussions of that decision that I made to lash back actually are still felt today. Admittedly, I act immaturely. I did not recruit the best in me. I acted from this emotionally undeveloped part of me, from this immature place. I didn't even pause. I didn't even wait to react. And I responded in anger.
Yeah. And I like what you said about emotional intelligence the other day. Mm-hmm. You said emotional intelligence is being able to feel these really big, really overwhelming emotions and not reacting in a way in which you'll later regret.
I think you cleaned that up pretty nicely.
Oh, yeah. You didn't say it that nicely at all. I think you said acting like blank something. Like
I won't use the word that I said the other day, but you cleaned it up nicely.
Yeah.
But, right.
That was good. I like this one better.
That was it. Like, I did lack that emotional intelligence. I felt those really big, really overwhelming, really hurtful feelings.
And instead of being able to sit with that and accept that and try and find the meaning behind it, you automatically did what most of us would do, is we just fire back.
Right.
Guns up. Let's go.
Right. And if I could go back and do that all over again, I would totally do things differently today. I would try to see the pain and the unmet need that the other person had, rather than just intently focusing on my own hurts, my own pain. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, that doesn't mean that I would accept abuse. And certainly that's not at all what we're saying in this episode. We're not saying that we should ever accept any form of abuse. And you can still create healthy boundaries with people and let them know that they've, you know, that they've injured you. But the result would have been so much better if I had just taken a moment to pause first and empathize with this person before I reacted.
Yeah, try to find the meaning in it.
Yes, that would have made a huge difference.
So let's go back to the story with Dr. Rosenberg.
Yes.
So how did he handle the situation when he was called rather vehemently a murderer?
Right.
Well, based on this man's situation, like, they'd just been through a riot, right? And the tone of his voice and the violence he had witnessed, Dr. Rosenberg had sort of a sense what this man was feeling and needing. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Rosenberg said, "Sir, like, are you feeling furious because your need for safety and support isn't being met by my government?" This, of course, was just a guess, probably a pretty good guess based on the clues, you know, around the camp. But whether it's accurate or not didn't really matter much, because when he said that, it indicated to the man that Dr. Rosenberg valued him and was trying to find his needs and his feelings in this situation.
Right. And I think it just showed him that he mattered, which of course is going to soften anyone, even someone who is screaming at you that you're a murderer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that softening opened up this door to more dialogue between these two men. And the man explained to Dr. Rosenberg how, you know, his basic needs for housing and sewage weren't being met. He talked about what it was like to live under these conditions. And here they had this beautiful dialogue, right, where empathetic connection was able to be felt by both of them. And so after this back and forth, you know, this long conversation, the man ended up inviting Dr. Rosenberg to share dinner with him, which is so cool because one moment the man was here calling him a murderer.
Kind of mad. And it could have gone the other way had he, you know.
Totally could have gone the other way.
Come back just as sharp, right?
Right. And then later on, here they are having dinner together. So that's a huge shift.
Yeah. That shift took a little bit of time. It didn't happen from just one sentence. But the point is that empathy can and did, in this instance, soften what began as a very harsh startup. And what do we know about harsh startups in marriage research?
Okay, so let's deviate from the conversation for a second, because let's take it back home to the marriage research that we love, Dr. John Gottman's research.
Yeah.
And what do we know about harsh startups? What we know is that harsh startups are extremely detrimental to relationships.
Because if you come in hot, it's going to end the same way.
Which is exactly what was going on in this story in the Middle East in this refugee camp. Like this individual, even though it wasn't a spouse, this was somebody coming in hot. They were coming in with a very harsh startup.
Yep.
Right. Yep. But in our marriages, it's so detrimental because when conversations start harshly, they almost always escalate and they rarely get turned around. 93% of the time, these conversations turn into more insults, more defensiveness, more criticisms. And frankly, it's hard, I think, harder to show empathy with the people that we're closest to. So it's hard to sometimes to take a beat. It's easier to just react. And that's why 93% of the time, conversations that start harshly end harshly.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense, though, right?
But then what does that, where does that take us? What does that even mean?
Well, it means that this conflict that you're having becomes progressively more negative. It's this spiral. And what do we know about high levels of negativity in conflict also in the marriage research?
Right. It predicts divorce.
Yeah. So the more negativity you have, the higher predicted divorces, and especially unhappiness. Of course, it would be better if we could just avoid harsh startups and criticisms and blaming words altogether if we were perfect. But when they do happen, we need to figure out a strategy for how to handle that. Because if we want our relationships to last and flourish, not just last, but flourish, we must keep this 5-to-1 positivity to negativity ratio during conflict. 5 positive things for every 1 negative thing that we say. And if we can do that, you know, then we're going to have kind of a flourishing relationship. If not, we run the risk of going down this distance isolation cascade, which leads to divorce, right? So If I'm nothing but negative in all of our disagreements, which are going to happen, then soon enough, we're just going to stop talking, because who wants to engage in another negative conversation? And then you start to have your own story.
Separate
and then
life.
I start to have my own story. Mm-hmm. And then we start to distance build our lives around those stories. And now we have distance and isolation.
Yes. Yeah. Just that one thing, that 5-to-1 ratio, regardless of whatever type of conflict style we have, if we can just focus on that one ratio, it makes such a huge difference.
Absolutely.
And this is where repair attempts come in, because like you said, we're not perfect. Sometimes we do start hot and we don't mean to. And sometimes we didn't even intend to, but it comes across wrong. And so this is where we need to be able to hit that backspace button on the keyboard, right? Yeah. We need to back it up. And so we need a way to turn the conversation around, and we do that with a repair attempt. But to do an effective repair attempt, we really need to strive to have that empathy, to have that empathetic connection. And no doubt, right, when harsh words, insults are being thrown around, that's an extremely challenging situation to empathize with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And the way that we do that is when our spouse or partner does say something hurtful, we need to be able to attempt to understand what they are feeling and what they are needing, and really strive to, instead of hearing the harsh words that they're saying, instead of hearing the insults, instead of hearing the criticisms, instead of hearing what they, quote, think of us in the moment, right? can we hear their feelings and their needs beneath that?
That's so hard because, you know, as we've talked about before, behind every negative emotion is an unmet need.
Right.
In the example of the refugee, you know, Dr. Rosenberg did this. He could have easily gotten defensive and said, that wasn't me. But instead, he did some sensing. He did some sensing to try to understand what the man was feeling in that moment. What were his feelings and what were his needs?
And relating this again back to our relationships, we can do the same thing. We can do this in our relationships just like he did. So if our partner is snappy or sharp, we can look beyond those words and look at what might they be feeling, right? So look at their day, look at the clues, look at what's going on at home, just like Dr. Rosenberg looked around the camp and saw the tear gas canisters, right? What are the clues? If you walk home and your wife is overwhelmed and she has throw up on her shirt and in her hair and hasn't had a shower, and like you can see all these things going on.
Not the time to come in hot.
Right? And maybe she was abrupt, but could you be saying something like, are you feeling angry right now because you have a need for peace that isn't getting met?
Yeah.
Or are you feeling upset right now because you're overwhelmed and you need to have rest? Or are you feeling irritated right now because you need to be heard and understood?
Yeah. Anything you say or do that would prevent, you know, this negativity from escalating could be considered a repair attempt.
Absolutely.
And if you're not sure what your partner is feeling, maybe try some of these things out. Like, you know, like, what are your concerns? Like, tell me what your concerns are. Help me understand. Or, you know, what do you need? Maybe what do you need from me right now? Another one would be like, hey, you know, especially if you're starting to feel like you're boiling up a little bit, like, hey, I'm starting to feel a little defensive right now. So maybe can we start over so I can understand what you're feeling and what you need right now? And it's really going to boil down to trying to figure out what they're feeling and trying to figure out what their needs are. Right. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a bit.
Yeah. So the main point here is, the more we practice empathy in these situations, the better we're going to be at repairing, repair early, repair often. We're going to get better at those repair attempts, and we're going to be able to stay in connection.
So let's talk about a challenging situation. Number two, number one was Dr. Rosenberg. So number two is when your spouse isn't open and vulnerable. Sounds like a lot of guys that I know. Mm-hmm. So how then would we be able to attune to someone's feelings and needs when they aren't great at expressing their feelings and needs, whether they won't or whether they just don't?
Right. And like we said earlier, when we're showing empathy, we don't really need to speak at all.
Right.
Right. It's more like that tuning that I talked about. So instead of trying to use a lot of words, what we're really doing most of the time is we're speaking with our eyes and we're speaking with our body language. But what if your partner isn't doing that? What if they're not opening up? What if they're not vulnerable? What if they're not allowing themselves to be seen?
Well, that's going to require, you know, you're going to have to get a little bit more flexible with your thoughts and your actions, right? We're going to need to do some intuitive work. You're going to need to sense this, right? And if you listened to our episode like 2 weeks ago, you might remember that there are literal listeners and inferential listeners. Right. And if your partner isn't directly sharing their feelings and needs, you may need to work on being more of an inferential listener, which means since we're going to have to guess, we're likely going to get it wrong sometimes. And we're not always going to be able to guess accurately about what your partner is feeling and needing. But that's OK, because we will always try to confirm our assumption with some more data as we, you know, move into this.
Yeah. And that reminds me of a funny story. I think I was working with a couple a while ago and they'd been married for like 15, 20 years.
Oh, I remember
this long
story,
time.
Actually.
And the wife was starting to share about a perpetual problem in their relationship. And I think it had to do with parenting, if I remember correctly. And she would say whenever this situation came up, how her husband would get so angry. He was so mad. He was so angry. And he immediately stopped the conversation and he corrected her. And he's like, I don't get angry. That's not anger. I just feel hurt.
Yeah.
So for 15 years, she had been guessing, but not confirming, just guessing that he was just this angry elf, right? And the anger was what he was feeling, but what he really felt was hurt. So it's going to be difficult sometimes to really know what a person is feeling. And that's why in empathy, we do want to check. We do want to check it out. It's one of those times that we do need to use our words and put into words what we sense the person might be feeling, and then connect their feelings with what they might be needing.
Yeah, because if you get that part right, like, you know, if you were to ask me, like, well, so are you feeling this? And they're like, no, even though I don't want to share my feelings, right?
Right. Are you feeling angry? No.
No.
Are you feeling irritated?
I mean, maybe a little.
Are you feeling annoyed?
Yeah.
Right. I could dig that out if I just sensed what, you know, based on the clues.
But if you never ask and just assume that I was angry
for
elf,
20 years.
Yeah. That's a problem, right?
Right.
So here's how this might sound. So are you feeling, right? Insert this emotion and then, you know, connect it up to their needs. Like, and are you feeling this because your need for X or your need for safety isn't being met, right?
So start with, are you feeling like we just demonstrated? Like,
right.
Are you feeling sad? Are
right.
you feeling angry? Are you feeling
unhappy,
hurt?
Yeah.
Right. And are you feeling that way because your need for something isn't being met? So you may have to do the sensing and guessing game. So are you feeling fill in the blank because you're needing fill in the blank?
Yeah. And I think the feeling part will be easier to get to than the need for people who aren't used to talking about needs or trying to be independent.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know, it's just going to take a little bit more flexibility, like you said earlier,
yeah.
on our part, and trying to really understand what they're feeling and needing and dig it out a little bit.
Yeah. And you're never going to get it right. Like, you might get it right the first time. You're a genius if you do, but don't get too attached to being right. Because again, right, we're sort of searching for these feelings and emotions. And this is the example of someone who, again, is not great at sharing their feelings and their needs.
Okay, so let's do one more. What's one more difficult situation to empathize with?
Oh yeah, this is the one, right? So difficult situation number three, hearing no.
Mm.
This is a hard one, right? This is a response that can really make us jump to our guns. Like, what do you mean no?
Mm. No?
Yeah, what do you mean no?
Like,
this is easy.
Would you help me in the garden?
No.
Would you mind doing the dishes?
No.
Could you pick up your dirty laundry?
Maybe.
Would you feed the dog?
Sure, that's easy.
Can you pick up the kids?
No.
What do you mean no?
Yeah.
Right?
So in marriage, we make these requests of each other all the time. They're small, simple, sometimes big, right? And generally, as long as those requests are free from either criticism or manipulation, then we generally enjoy helping each other out. But sometimes there might be a good reason for someone to say no.
Yeah. And we did talk about this back in episode 60, we talked about how to say no compassionately without it starting a fight.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But let's flip the coin on that. It's also important that we're able to hear no compassionately, which is being on the receiving end of that, right? And no doesn't always just sound like no. Sometimes it has a full sentence like, you know, I don't want to, or no, I'm not willing to do that. It can sound like a lot of different things, but the thing is when this happens, we want to be able to show our spouse, this other person that we love, that we see and we hear the human that is there, that is behind the no, instead of just jumping to, what do you mean no, and starting a fight.
Yeah. How specifically does that work though?
Well, we would do that by trying to hear the feelings and the needs that are behind the no. Again, it's the same thing. It's hearing the feelings and the needs, in this case, that's behind the no, whether that's a need for peace or safety or autonomy or a bath by myself for 10 minutes, right? Whatever it is.
Especially when there's babies around.
There's a reason for that no.
So really, anytime a person says no, what they're usually saying is like, I'd like to help you, but right now I have something else. I have a need of my own that is keeping me from doing this thing that you requested of me.
Right.
So when we hear something that sounds like no, like not right now, I can't, maybe later, we can reframe that and realize that usually our spouse or our partner, they may also have an unmet need.
Right.
And maybe with a bit of compassion, we can find a solution that honors both their needs and our needs.
Which we did talk about in that same episode. It's like, yeah, let me go take a bath for 30 minutes and then I'll help you with the dishes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. There's a way to find a win-win, as long as we can slow it down, find the compassion and find the need that's beneath the no. But again, that's one of those situations that we just so often jump to our guns.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Go to guns.
Yeah. So those were three great examples of how to use empathy, I think, in difficult situations.
Yeah. So what we want to know is what you took away from this episode. So come on over to social media this week, visit with us, better yet, Maybe share what you've learned by leaving it in a comment along with a 5-star review here on whatever platform you're listening on.
And more importantly, as always, if there is someone in your life that needs help in their relationship, would you and you feel they would either benefit from this episode or any of our previous episodes, would you kindly share our channel with them?
And of course, as always, be kind to each other this week. Take care of each other. And remember, it's the small things done often that make the biggest impact.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to Master Your Marriage. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, then we want to hear from you. Just go to MasterYourMarriagePodcast.com and send us your question.
Oh, and while you're there, you can also check out our retreats and events and even apply for coaching.
And make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you get advanced notice of when the next episode drops, plus show notes and many extras. Thanks again for tuning in.